session number 26546, Reel 3.
Major Highfield, Reel 3. We're talking about the winter conditions you just mentioned before we finish. When you got to North Leeds to join the 74th Field Regiment, can you tell us a bit about how that impacted on you?
Well, the conditions were severe. There was up to 18 inches of snow everywhere. And the guns and equipment were on the little squares in North Leech, and they never moved while we were there. The men were housed in barns, in bunk tier sort of beds with wire and straw palliasses on wire, bits of wire in between the sections. I was billeted in a room above the pub somewhere, an attic, which I suppose was a maid's bedroom eventually. And there was little that one could do. And every morning we went route marches out into the countryside, and the men sang, "Roll out the barrel, hang out your washing on the Siegfried line," this sort of stuff. And I think it's the last time I recall troops really singing. I think it was the last time.
How far would you go? Would everyone go, all the officers as well?
No, you'd do it by troops. So you'd have your own troop, and you'd go out and you'd do a 5 mile.
But you'd go?
Yes, you'd go. You all march together. And that was it. The senior subaltern in A troop used most of the time to wear field boots, and he was a keen rider, and he'd also seemed to have found a lady friend, so he went riding the afternoon with his lady friend. And
Now, who were the key figures that you were meeting at this time, or would it be better to leave it till you're in France?
No, I think we had this for about a fortnight before we went to France. They were under orders to go to the BEF when I joined. And the battery commander was Major Abey, who had First World War ribbons, and his battery captain was Bill Cheeseman.
Well, tell me about Abey first. What was he like as a battery commander and as an officer?
Well, the two were rather inseparable. It was a little bit like a bank manager and his assistant crony talking when they got together. They would discuss this, anything that went on. And the mess was the saloon bar of one of the pubs, which was a standard arrangement in those days. And that's where we were for our meals in the evening. And the subalterns, there was the commander of A troop had been sent already to France as the advance party. It was a chap called Ted Ritson. The troop commander of B company was Bob Howe, and the third troop C was commanded by a lieutenant, Johnston.
Now, how did these officers all get on, and how did you get on with them? How did they treat you?
One was treated very well, but very friendly, and I was getting used to the northeast warmth and dialect too. The dialect from some of the men was very, very strong, and on an occasion when the sergeant major wasn't there, the senior number one, Sergeant Carr, would report, and if he was reporting to me that the parade was correct, I found it very difficult to follow anything he said at all. His accent was so north broad. Anyway, we weren't there long.
What about the men? How did you, I mean, you got your troop. How did you set about getting to know your NCOs? I mean, how important were they to you? You were very inexperienced. The trouble is, how experienced were they, your NCOs?
Well, quite a lot of the men had been with the unit a number of years and been going to annual camps and so on, and you assumed that they knew what their role was. You still had to find out quite a lot about what was going on and what went on. We had one interesting parade in a big field some distance away from North Leech when we were inspected by the King, who apparently came to see each division, if he could, before they went to the BEF. And huge, perhaps 8,000 men were lined round this field, and he appeared. And we were told that at the given moment, we were to make what was called an organised rush to man the hedgerow when his car drove off. But I do remember, I just saw his distant figure, and you knew you were really going to the BEF. And then finally, the day came when the vehicle party went off. They all disappeared because they were going to load everything at Avonmouth. And that they went a different route. We were to go to Southampton, and we got on one of the Channel ferries, and that's the way we crossed to Cherbourg. And that started our service in the BEF.
So that would be January or February?
End of January.
So what happened when you got to France?
We got there very late in the evening, and we then entrained on what must have been, I should have thought, the oldest rolling stock the French railways had. Very uncomfortable, and travelled most of the night with very short runs, and detrained early in the morning in the middle of the Normandy countryside at a place called La Houte. It's halfway between Le Mans and Alençon, in the very deep countryside. And from there, we marched to a village called Saint-Victor, Saint V-I-C-T-E-U-R, and the snow was still deep on the ground, and we were stuck there for a month.
So basically into March or January, February anyway.
Yes.
And what were your billets like? Tell me what the billets were like.
The men were billeted in barns with straw palliasses. The officers were put around the place, and I was billeted on a French family, and they had a sort of something out in the yard, a brick building in the yard, and I was given a strange-looking bed with a feather mattress on it in this building. And the officer's mess was almost a shanty shed thing off the local inn.
And how did you get on with the French, the people who are looking after the house, the billetees or billeters?
They were very, very poor. It was a very poor area. And they were concerned with anything that was damaged. Getting firewood to burn in this place where the side of the inn was, we then had to pay for it because they treated everything as of value to their existence.
Were they friendly within that? I mean, you know, you can have people who are concerned for their economic welfare, but they can also be friendly or not.
The people at the inn were friendly. They dished out omelettes to us every night and so on. But the villages were very withdrawn. I suppose all the men had been called up and were away. And with the snow on the ground, we were reduced to marching. And in fact, I now mention one thing, which is loos. There were only three that we could find in the whole village. There was a communal one in the churchyard, which sat about four, with stone thing. And there was one at the bottom of the billet where I was, and I think there was one in the mayor's garden. So after we'd had breakfast in the morning, we all marched out round to the nearest field with a spade on our shoulders and performed at our hedgerow of choosing. The cooks had a very hard time here because they were wrestling with the army cooking stove for the first time. And
what were the problems? What do you mean wrestling?
They hadn't used... You had a thing called a number one cooker with various stands and things that went on it, and they had no continuous experience in using these things. So the meals were a bit difficult to start with.
So what was the food like? What would you get?
I can only remember the difficulty of the cooks with the stoves, and there were big Dixies, and you had mostly tin food, M&V, I suppose, and so on. And
now what kind of training were you doing during that month?
There was nothing we could do. We were marooned, we had no transport, so you had a march in the mornings, a good long march, and waited. We only had our small arms equipment with us.
Was there any trouble with some of the troops? Because sometimes you get British troops in France that they're inexperienced with the stronger forms of alcohol, wine, brandy, that sort of thing. Was there any trouble with the lads in the estaminets, or did they behave themselves?
I don't remember. I think there literally were very few places they could go. They certainly didn't come to the inn where the officers were, and I don't remember anything else about that.
It had an impact on you. So where did you go from San Victor?
Well, there was the one trouble there was that we had what was called an iron ration, which is a sort of rather large sardine tin sort of thing with a composite thing, which strapped into your battle dress pocket. And some of the men opened these. And therefore, this, of course, had to be dealt with disciplinary. And the other battery was in another village about 4 miles away. And we had what we called the Chocolate Soldier Parade, because all the people who'd opened these tins then had to do a march, additional in the evening or in the afternoon, to the other village and back again as a punishment.
You were there into February, for a month anyway.
Well, I think we went to communal baths in Alençon on two occasions.
What was that like? What do you remember of it?
Very prehistoric, but you got a tiny little cake of scented soap, and I think there were showers, a sort of shower thing. And before we left, we did go into the officers, went into Le Mans on one occasion to have a good dinner and to celebrate the fact that we were moving the next day.
Now, what do you remember of that? I mean, that's a very traditional First World War style thing to do, going to a... What was the dinner like? What do you remember of that night itself?
Well, it was the food was first class and champagne was served. And it was 6 shillings a bottle. And And that, but that was the only expedition apart from the baths. Of course, we were only there 3 to 4 weeks, and then we moved on.
Was it a hard drinking mess? I mean, you know what I mean by it. I mean, some messes have steady and almost continual, and you could say heavy drinking. Other messes are quite abstemious, and some messes are almost teetotal. What level of yours?
I don't remember much, except people had a glass of wine from the estaminet, and that was all there was.
So, just more social drinking.
You went to bed. It's cold.
So you moved in February. Where did you move to?
We moved up the Amiens area in 2 or 3 stages. The transport had all arrived, and off we went. So we had a complete equipment again. We stayed at a village called near Beauvel, B-O-V-E-L-L-E-S, and we were there for, I think, another period of 4 or 5 weeks.
So just about into April, from the sound of it. Now, what was Beauvel's like? What was your billet like there?
I don't remember much for some reason. They were obviously superior to Saint-Victor, and and we did do some field firing there. We did.
Well, let's talk about that then. Yeah. If that's what do you remember? Because this is almost one of the first times we've had a chance to talk about. With your training being so abbreviated, what was a field firing exercise?
Well, we went to a range and fired our guns, which were 18 pounders Mark II. The regiment had 18 pounders Mark IV, but they were taken away shortly after the outbreak of war, and we were given these 18 pounders Mark II, or the regiment was given them, which is a 1916 gun.
Now, what was your opinion of it as a gun? I mean, what were its faults and what were its faults and advantages, if you see what I mean, as a gun?
The number ones were not happy with them at all.
Why not?
The recuperator systems were difficult to maintain, the oil and the air, and it was quite common for the gun to jam after 15 rounds, and then you had to have the artificer come along and try and put it right. And they were very unhappy with the Mark II guns.
As compared to the Mark IV.
That's right.
Now, what about the range firing? What was a range firing exercise? What would you do when you went to a range?
Well, I don't remember very much about this. I had now been called in to be the assistant command post officer. And
well, tell me about your role. What did that involve?
Well, I'm assistant to the command post officer, and he is the one who's responsible for coordinating the fire of the guns, the survey, and this complicated process of getting into action. And quite frankly, it seemed that he was the only person who really understood it at that stage, which was a bit alarming.
Now, in some regiments, the gunner's assistant, that they had assistants who were other ranks, gunners, who were highly educated often, who were axed, GPO axed, you know, OP axed, assistants basically. Did your regiment rely on these educated men to help in sort of gun positions work?
I think it's difficult to establish at this point of my experience with the regiment. They were basically 550 territorials and 100 regulars who had been recalled was the makeup. The regulars and the long-serving territorials knew their jobs, and you assumed they knew them.
So the unit hadn't really shaken down enough.
Not at all.
That's fair enough. Not at all. So, as assistant command post officer, would there be much for you to do at the range, or I mean, would you go through all this procedure of setting up the guns in this very long-winded way, or...?
Well, I'm thinking, actually, that perhaps I was still with the troop at this time, but you let the people get on with it. You didn't know very much yourself, and you watched other people. And then the time came for us to move from there to go
so
on.
Nothing much happened at Bovell.
No. You weren't in touch with anything. And then we moved on, and eventually came to a position near Lille, not very far from Lille, and this was a totally different area.
Do you have a village name or anything? We're not sure about the name of it. It's near Lille. Now, what was the setup there? It's a different countryside.
Very different countryside. It's built up. You're in not far off the coal mining area. Industrial, and there was a very strange atmosphere of defeatism almost amongst the villagers. The talk of fifth column was quite strong.
How did it show that? Tell me a bit more about how the French behaved. I mean, why did you think they were defeatist?
Well, you're in an area which was fought over very close to areas that were fought over in the First World War. All the men had gone, and I didn't realise it at the time, but some Belgian people were recruited to come and work on the farms to help, and I think this may have added to this strange mix. But it was a strange atmosphere. It was billeted in a house, and we had a proper room in the cafe, and we did start to have our liqueurs there. And I remember two or three of the senior officers would have a bottle of Cointreau, which they would mark their name on and draw a line on where they'd last had a drink.
What was the officers' mess like? Talk to me about what the officers' mess was like, a typical evening in the officers' mess in the Lille area.
Well, I don't think that you had your meal, and again, you turned in pretty early. You were billeted in various places, and I remember the family I was billeted with didn't say very much. There seemed to be a relatively attractive daughter, but I wasn't didn't make any conversation with her or much with the family at all. And there were no men, and there were slag heaps around the area and so on.
So what were you doing while you were there? You got there about April.
Yes.
So I presume you were there about a month until the phony war ended.
Well, we weren't there so very long before the war broke out.
Now, what were you actually doing? I mean, were you preparing gun positions or anything, or was it just another place to stay?
I think it was mainly another place to stay. Maybe I've forgotten the detail, but eventually we came, and suddenly May the 10th appeared, which was when the Hitler started his invasion.
Now, what do you remember of that? What signs were there that day?
Well, May the 10th, beautiful weather. We called it Hitler's weather because it ran all the way through it, the whole of the campaign. And it was very fine. There was a lot of air activity. The advanced striking force was brought into action. And you saw quite a lot of air activity for the first 3 days.
What do you mean by air activity?
Fighters overhead, fairly high up.
British or German?
Mostly we saw our British, but we didn't see any planes after the third day. They had exhausted themselves. Can I go back for one moment to a couple of the things that went on prior to May the 10th? I was made the camouflage officer, I remember now. And I went to one of the airfields and went up and from an Anson aircraft viewed the netting and stuff that we put up over the gun positions. And then I went back and had to tell the numbers one how they should put the scrim in the nets. Now, that's one thing I can remember from there.
Now, how did you try and disguise yourself from the... It's enormously difficult to disguise guns because of the tracks. How did you try and do it?
Well, you had these large nets which could be erected over it, but the point was that you had to scrim a pattern which was irregular and just about covered the gun in one corner to try and to look the best, to the best disguise from the air. Anyway, that was going back a bit.
So were you doing any of that? I mean, did you set up the camouflage over the guns?
Well, the numbers one did. The numbers one and that.
And you supervised?
No. Well, I told them that putting it all in a row was wrong, and they cottoned on, I think, in the end.
Were you aware that you had to avoid tracks being made? Because just a couple of men walking in the same way makes a track that can be seen from the air. I mean, were you aware of that level of thing?
I don't think so at the time. I mean, one would think about it, perhaps, but...
Were you actually attacked during those first 3 days? I mean, you know, the bombing, the German bombing raids and things. Did any Stuka attacks? Did any of that happen?
No.
The first day.
So if I can explain, the deployment was this: on the balloon going up, there was Plan D, and the advanced divisions went straight up into Belgium and onto the Dyle River. 50th Division was called a motorised division, which meant that they had an RESC column attached which could lift an infantry brigade. We only had two brigades as opposed to the standard three brigades, and we were nominated as GHQ reserve, and we didn't move for the first 7 days.
And so you just stayed near Lille?
That's right. And I was spent most of my time carrying out reconnaissances of the local slag heaps. We had very poor maps, very small scale indeed, so that one really had to go out and sort of draw a map yourself. And I spent most of my time going around these slag heaps, drawing maps, so that if parachutists were dropped in the night, we had some idea of where to go and what the geography was.
You didn't have, I mean, because they've got plenty of maps from the First World War, but they hadn't sorted out the maps for you at that
time. No, I mean, you got a map which covered the whole of northern France, and there was no detail better than that.